This is the Top Agents Playbook podcast, episode number 8.
Welcome to the Top Agents Playbook podcast, your source for the very best tools, tips, and ideas used by real estate's top performers. Now here's your host, Ray Wood.
Well, hi, everybody, and welcome back to the show. Today, I'm with Mark Lands from Lands Real Estate in Adelaide, South Australia. Good morning, Mark.
Yeah, good morning, Ray. How you doing?
Buddy, I'm very well, thank you. Good Friday. Thank you for giving me a little bit of time on your holiday. Before we get into what you're doing at the moment, can you give me just a little bit of your backstory? I think you're 31. Can you tell me how long you've been in real estate, how you got there, and just a bit about the journey?
Yeah, sure thing, Ray. So I finished school, applied for uni, and then decided that what I'd been planning to do wasn't really what I wanted to do. My dad had Lands Real Estate, was running from a home office, predominantly property management and a small section of sales, and I just decided that they went away. They came home from a holiday and I said, oh, by the way, I'm thinking of doing this. So it was a bit of a shock to them, and yeah, it was a big deal for them to then decide, okay, well, if this is the case, we'll, you know, move back to a commercial premises, a new area, and really grow it, you know, from scratch again, I suppose.
Yep.
So that was 11, 12 years ago.
Right.
And I must have started when I was 20. So it would have been around that time. And, yeah, it took probably a good, I would say, 6-7 years to really get up and running. You know, finding systems that we want to use and I guess growing my own skill set. And yeah, it's probably grown fairly consistently for the last, you know, three or four years. And yeah, it's been fantastic. Working with family is brilliant. So yeah, we have a really good working relationship and
yes.
Yeah, hopefully for many more years to come.
Yeah. It's quite a common thing in our industry that and I'm sure it comes with its challenges from time to time, but there's so many people working with family and brothers and sisters and parents and cousins and things like that. So anybody listening to this who's in that situation will be interested to learn more. Can you tell me about the last 12 months in your business? Let's fast forward because then I want to go back a little bit and because I know your growth's been phenomenal. Can you tell me about, say, the last year, number of listings, number of sales, commission earned?
Yeah, sure. So the last 12 months, I'm sitting around 600,000
right.
Commission. Transactions probably around 75 to 80. Listings probably 100 to 110.
Right.
So I guess that's what we've sold plus what we've got on the market at the moment. Listing to sale around 98%.
Right.
So yeah, it's been a busy 12 months. So yeah, it's been good.
How does that compare with the year before?
Year before, we were probably up from about 350, so it's a fairly considerable increase.
Like double.
It's been busy. So I can't think of the number of sales, probably about 40, thereabouts,
right.
Low 40s. So, yeah, so it's been a pretty flat out last 12 months, which has been great, but, yeah, a lot of growing pains that go along with that as well.
Mark, tell me about the model, the business model that you run, because I know that you're predominantly the sales maker, you're the rainmaker within the business. Do you have a support team? Tell me how it works.
Yeah, so currently in the sales side of the business, it's pretty much myself and my mum, Suzanne, who's my PA. She does that in a part-time capacity, but she does a hell of a lot out of hours for me and is fantastic, works very similar that I do in a bit OCD and very administrative in what we do. It's kind of outgrown that model to date. So someone else is going to be coming into that team very shortly who we can hopefully develop. So there'll be a team of about 2.5 and then that person hopefully will grow into their own entity within the business and grow the sales team in that way. That's the goal anyway. And, you know, being open to opportunities that pop up along the way and, I suppose trying to learn those skills as we spoke about earlier is been selling houses for a long time and can do that well, but knowing when to recruit, when to grow a business, when to not grow a business, how to induct those people, how to train those people is something that I guess it's just going through the process and making sure that we get it right and systemize it so we minimize the chance of getting it wrong, I suppose.
Well, I guess you learn as you go along and everybody makes mistakes. It's the only way that you can grow, really. But you like to keep your mistakes to a minimum, obviously. Inside your business, just put property management aside, how many are dedicated to the sales team, obviously, in addition to yourself?
Just me and my mum, that's it.
Right, okay. Okay, so you did 650 with yourself and your mum helping you part-time?
Correct.
Okay, that's an awesome effort. All right. So you've doubled your figures in the last 12 months almost, or commissioned earned anyway. Mm-hmm. What do you attribute that to? How did that come about? Is it your name getting out more in the community? Are you doing better marketing? What's happening?
Look, it's probably, I think it's a combination of a lot of things, which is, it probably sounds boring, but the more that I've probably sat down and tried to think about it and evaluated, and there's a lot of things that you do, small things that you just do consistently, I think, that start to generate results.
Right, like what?
Just like calling every buyer back that emails off realestate.com.au, and even if they email, call them and run through the set of questions that I want to run through with them to find out if they're a seller or not.
Yeah.
Every person that comes through an open. And I suppose a big indicator as to, amongst other things, as to why we're at capacity with how we are, is they're the things that have been getting missed over the last few months.
Right.
And so the things that probably underpinned that growth have, as with the business has got so busy, it's been hard to dedicate time to do that. So I guess I've then looked at, well, and I suppose from that side of things, there's been a lot more inbound inquiry because of, you know, volume of work that you're doing, the quality of that work, the speed of those transactions. So then more people are calling in.
Yep.
So the business has grown, even though some of those key things that I've relied upon have not had the attention that they should have had. And I suppose, you know, that gives us confidence going forward that if we can gear up so that those things can also be focused on, in line with the extra, I guess, attraction that the business has created, then, you know, hopefully that will allow us to, you know, keep going in that trajectory or, you know, something similar to that anyway.
Yes. You do something that you have something in common with so many top agents, is that you're big on systems and organisational and structure. I know you're a big fan of Locked On, and you've been a Locked On user for a while. Were you using another software system prior to that?
So prior to that, I was using an in-house software that we had developed through Microsoft Access.
Right.
A great mate of mine, Keith, helped me back. Well, when I came into the business, there was no software in place. There was no kind of CRM system at all, and I probably had a pretty limited understanding of what was required in that regard, other than I need to kind of somehow manage this flow of contacts.
Yep.
And so we just developed a really simple system and then kind of added to that. And we probably used that for, I don't know, well, I suppose seven years.
Right.
Then we outgrew that and then decided we needed to look around and looked at all the options that were available and my desktop complete data and all of that stuff. And yeah, Locked On was the way we went.
Okay.
And it's been fantastic. And there's no coincidence that obviously from implementing that, that's allowed us to increase capacity and whatever system it is that you use. But, you know, if you use it, and the thing with that type of system is it does create workload. Because it demands more data and more information, and that's more time. Yeah. And so, you know, you're kind of, I mean, it's central to everything we do, but it's also appreciating the fact that you're not creating a rod for your own back, but if your expectations are such that you want to maximize what it can do, then, you know, you've got to be committed to, you know, to investing your time and effort into it. And if you do, obviously, it, it pays dividends.
Yeah. Do you have a favourite feature or features within Locked On that, that you like to use that you felt have made a difference to your business?
Well, there's, I guess, to what area of business, but I suppose in relation to winning listings, one of the biggest areas, I guess, that I've found we've got success in, or that my mindset's probably changed over the last 12, 18, 24 months, or whether I've understood it a bit better, is trying to communicate the advantage of our success in an area to our potential clients.
Right.
So as opposed to saying to someone, oh, look, we sell all the homes in Paraka or, you know, Manly or wherever it is, we've got the biggest market share and telling this to people, it's not really relevant to them. Yeah, it's great. It might give them some confidence or proof that you transact and you're good at what you do. But the way I use the buyer match tool within Locked On and the reporting from that email tries to then demonstrate to those clients, it is actually important that you use us. The advantage in using us is that we have access to these buyers that I know no one else does. People don't run opens as consistently as we do in this area or sell as many properties. So we do meet more buyers specifically in this area, and they're captured through this system, and this is how I trace them. This is how I communicate to them. When I send an email to them about your property, I can see how many of those people open that email. And if we're targeting, if it goes out to 600 buyers, we're normally going to get a 35 to 40% open rate. And then from that, I can then see how many people clicked on your property, went through the photos. And that's going to give me a list of 15 to 25 people.
Right.
I can then show them a report for another home that we've run that through, and then also show them that I can then look at those buyers, see where I met those buyers, what their price range was, what their comments were. And so that's where, if you capture that data consistently over time through realestate.com.au and your open inspection callbacks and all of those things, now whether those people buy something from you or not, whether they have a property to sell or not, you can, one, offer them a service in an ongoing basis, but two, you then can utilize that data when you're trying to win your next listing. So
are you saying you use that, what you've just explained to us, you use that information or you illustrate that at a listing presentation?
Correct, yes, okay. 100%.
Gotcha.
And it starts to create relevance then to the client and connects, okay, your success in the area, well, that's great for you, but I just want to sell my house. So it starts to show them that that success is beneficial to them as a seller.
Yeah, well, you're giving them a glimpse into your actual inner workings of your system, I guess.
Yeah, you are. And look, that's, you know, that's probably, and there's other things, but that's one example of something that is very powerful. And, you know, I've transacted that many homes purely by that email going out. And once it shows me the list of who clicked through the photos, an SMS going to those buyers and saying, look, I listed this property. I don't know if I've thought of you when I listed it. I sent you an email about it. I don't know if you've seen it. Yeah, of course I know they've seen it. We can check that and trace that. It might have been out to 400 people and then it tailored down to this list of 15 and they got an SMS. But straight away, that buyer is probably getting better service, even though it's automated from our end to an extent.
Yeah.
They're getting better service as a buyer than they get probably from a vast majority of, of other consultants. So
I have to say,
it's kind of twofold.
Yeah, I have to say that's a very popular feature within Locked On that so many of our Locked On subscribers talk about. And if anybody missed that, it was Mark can send an email out to, I don't know, 500 people or 1,000 people. And then the following day he can get a report and identify people who've actually opened the email and people who haven't. So then he knows how to follow up with different emails. Am I right? Is that basically how you operate it? Yeah.
It is correct. And the other point that I guess is trying to explain the relevance to a potential seller if you're using it for that purpose is when you meet a buyer at a property and you're trying to sell a property to them, there's a barrier because, you know, you're wanting to sell them something, so they're probably reluctant to tell you what their financial capacity is, what their situation is. As soon as that person tells you, look, Mark, I don't like it, it's not for me. Now, whether they tell you that at the open or it's when you call them back, doesn't matter. But as soon as they tell you that, if you've got a script around, look, you know, we sell a lot of properties in this area, we're happy to try to find you something. Did you want me to get some listings to you before they're advertised? A vast majority of those buyers are going to say, yeah, that'd be great. so I can send you appropriate properties. Can you give me a rundown as to what you're after? They're going to then tell you obviously what it is that they're after. So I can also send you properties that fall within your budget. What's your capacity? How much can you spend? Okay. I don't want to send you stuff that's too dear or not. That buyer then will tell you, it's very likely they're going to tell you exactly their financial capacity.
Yeah.
They're going to say things like, well, we're pre-approved to X amount of dollars. Our parents can probably chip in this much. I suppose we could go to this level if we found the perfect home. It's all recorded. It's all typed in. And then you forget about it. But so then down the track, assuming you list something, it hits that buyer list. You can see this person's opened it. You can follow through. You look through their file on locked on or whatever. You can then see exactly what they told you. So if this home that you've sent them is below that capacity, they make an offer on it, which is, this is all we can afford. You actually have got a hell of a lot more information about that situation.
Yeah, you have.
So, you know, so it's, and once again, it's then trying to communicate that to a seller. So it's, you know, the advantage is twofold.
So what I'm hearing, and maybe you can add to this, is that the way that you've enhanced your systems and your contact, and I guess, can I ask how many contacts you have in your system?
There is, in total, there's about 3,000.
Right, okay. So
a lot of those are buyers, though, so they're not all potential sellers, unfortunately.
Do you deal with a lot of first home buyers or?
We do. Yeah, we do. My marketplace is such that first home buyers, immigrant purchasers and first time investors is probably a large portion of it. So probably one of the biggest challenges is I don't see that many people that come through property and say, oh, look, Mark, we've got another home that we need to sell.
Yep.
So, I mean, I'm always looking to identify that, but it's not a large portion, so we have to try to capture that data in other ways. But correct. But it is still going all these, you know, and the system is such that they're captured on an iPad, even irrespective of who they are. So it does minimise the workload in trying to hold that much data.
Yep, one entry and it's all in.
Yeah, correct.
Okay. The next question, or just going back to that, would you say that your, let's just call it in terms of commission, your commission has increased commensurate with the number of contacts you have inside Locked On?
It would have, correct, yes.
Yeah, and as part of the growth of the business.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, for sure. It allows us to, I guess, leverage off of those contacts, utilize them better. I suppose that the thing that, you know, we also have to be careful of is that we don't bloat it with, you know, with unnecessary data or inaccurate data. And that's all just to do with time management and committing the time to it or a system or a structure or a time slot or whatever it is within, you know, your day, as to how you want to manage it and so forth. And that is absolutely a challenge that we've been dealing with. And as I said, as it's grown and we're probably unstaffed at the moment, you know, for what we do.
Yes.
And everyone runs things differently and different numbers for a different number of people. And it's probably no right or wrong way to go about it.
It's the way that works, I guess. You'll do what works.
Yeah, that's right. Exactly. And, you know, when you get to the point where you just feel like you're literally just reacting to everything, then you go, okay, well, you know, there's more capacity there, because if we're not reacting to everything when we're running through our systems as we should be, then, you know, that should generate more commission. So
was it hard to transfer your data from your former system to your new or to Locked On? Was that an issue?
It wasn't an issue. And to be honest, it's still not all over. So maybe it was an issue because I've not finished doing it, but, right. Yeah,
it depends how you do it, I guess. I've noticed that the users that just throw it all in there, and that goes to the integrity of your database, it's not going to be great. There might be people who've moved, had phones disconnected, whatever. A lot of the top agents I know, when they do change to Locked On, they're almost going through one by one and saying, okay, I'm just going to tackle four or five a day. I'm going to move them over and I'm going to manually enter it so I can get a complete update as to what's going on. I'd be interested to learn how you transferred over.
Yeah, correct. Yeah, look, exactly that way. Right. It was something that when we first set it up and I was talking to Luke and, you know, said, oh, look, can you just whack this stuff in? He said, well, look, just consider, you know, the implications of that. And if you've got dramas in your previous system, or not dramas, but if you've got inaccuracies, you're just importing those into your new system. So
You're making more work for yourself later on.
Yeah, that's right. And look, the other thing as well is the way that if you're running your business through, like, completely through a system, everything that you do is going to go through that system. So it will grow very quickly. You put, if you meet, say you run six opens on a Saturday and you meet 10 groups at each open, there's 60 buyers that are going to be on your database Saturday night that weren't there Saturday morning.
Yeah.
And then out of those 60 buyers, there might be two or three people that have a place that they need appraised or to sell, or that can then be put on a DNA for follow-up. There might be some that are not looking, but it grows very quickly. So it's looking at, you then need to manage that growth, and it's at a learning phase where you've got a new system and so forth, so that takes time. But then the people of your old system, it is an opportunity that has someone been missed, and each person you take that opportunity to address where they're at. If it's someone I'd sold for 6 years ago and I hadn't contacted them, okay, get on RP data. Has there been another transaction that I've somehow missed? Or, you know, trying to identify that. So then if you capture it cleanly enough, you can then communicate with them, you know, in a more effective fashion and simpler as well, trying to bulk a lot of that communication and combining that with phone conversations, so, and having a strategy around that.
Okay. Let me ask then, if your buyers aren't generating a lot of listings, because a lot of them are first-time home buyers, where are your listings coming from? Can you tell me, can we change horses and talk about your prospecting and marketing?
Yeah, sure. So, look, it's a good question, and it's there's, from our side of things, and I guess it's probably the same as anyone else, is there's a few areas of, I guess, your BDA areas or your core. So we've got a core area, which is Paraka. That's my core suburb.
How many households are we talking, Matt?
So in Paraka, there's about 2,500.
Okay.
And that's an area where over the years we would let a box drop and never door knocked, rightly or wrongly, I don't know, but I've never done it. I would let a box drop and basically walk through those streets. It would capture some data and some cold calling and so forth, but tried to grow that. And that's probably why it took quite a few years for the business to get up and running, because I was really trying to find out how you do this and, you know, who you speak to and at what point in time and so forth. But so you've obviously got your physical core area. So that's something that, and look, it's at a point now and, you know, I don't know if there's a good thing or a bad thing, but haven't done a letterbox drop in there for 18 months. The data that I have in locked on, the potential sellers that I've appraised through that area, if I just list something or sell something, they get an SMS or an email or a direct mail letter. So, there is a lot of scope there for me to increase the amount of vendor data within our physical core area,
right?
Because we don't have it all captured, and so that's another area I can see that we can get better.
Yes.
So you've obviously got that area as a physical area. Then you your own personal sphere of influence and people you know through Facebook, you know, through how you communicate with them. So business comes through that. Then you've obviously also got your current stock that you're working on.
Yep.
So as I said, that's something which is somewhat of a challenge in regards to, it can be a challenge in regards to, look, I'm not always meeting people that have property to sell all the time.
Yep.
But we still are. And then probably the last area is like your out of area BDA, which probably doesn't really make sense, but because it's not out of area business development area, but people that don't live in those immediate suburbs that you've tried to target that aren't in your personal influence or not people that you've known over the years, but they're the people that you've met at opens. They're the people that have sent email inquiries in, that you've identified have properties to sell that live in other suburbs, and then they're captured. So across those kind of four areas, you then need to know how to communicate with each one of those people. And depending on which area they're in, I have a different strategy around how I do that.
Okay.
And so it's trying to then leverage off of each one of those things.
Yep.
And then probably the last section is just that inbound inquiry. So as you get busier and you get more signs and so forth, then it just seems that people find you as opposed to you finding them. So,
well, you're building exposure, I guess, locally in your market. I mean, I'm just looking on, I just did a search for Paraka in realestate.com.au, and I can see that you've got a lot of listings in there, and I guess if people are looking online, they're going to see you. So you must be getting these calls that are coming through. You mentioned before direct mail. Are you using the direct mail feature within Locked On?
Yeah, correct. Yeah, right. We are. So
how are you finding that?
Good. Yeah, fantastic. And okay. It's, you know, and that's the thing is it's, you know, like I said earlier, it's a lot of little things that I think make a difference. And, yeah, email's free and email's great and I use it. And I've just described earlier how I use it to communicate with buyers and demonstrate to a vendor. Fantastic. But, you know, people, you've got to communicate with these people in different ways because sure. You might have a vendor that they just don't check their email. You've got their email address. And if that's all the only way you're communicating with them, you're not communicating with them or vice versa. So
have you had a look at what your email open rate is on with general communication? I guess within Locked On you can monitor that.
Correct. Yeah. Look, we generally sit around 35
that's
to 40%.
That's very good.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's
great. So I'm pretty pleased about that. We don't tend to have don't have that many unsubscribes. That said, I had a buyer email go out yesterday it was about 650 buyers and there was about 11 or 12 unsubscribes.
Okay.
So, which that was the most I've seen in a long time. Right. It was one or two. So, for whatever reason, some of those buyers have been on there for some time, but we don't tend to have too many. It also notifies us if emails are bouncing.
Yep.
So, you know, you have a good understanding of it, but I think it's just that combination of, like you said, some direct mail or mail that goes to people's addressed to them, just in case anyone's curious about that. But, as well as obviously your SMS communication, which is a really good form of communication because you get instant replies and then when you don't have those people's numbers in your phone, then you go and put them in Locked On, it tells you who that was and vice versa. So, it is a very good system and it's just understanding how you want to communicate to each of those pools of data or each of those groups of people, you know. So the way that I send a CMA report out to people that are within my core area is there's two dates in the year where so I don't need to set a trail for those people to remind me to send a CMA to them.
Right.
I'll just basically go, okay, on, you know, middle of March this year, I'm going to do a CMA to everyone within my core area right. And the suburb next door.
Yep.
So therefore I can just find those clients purely based upon where they live, you know, do an advanced find. And it will capture all of those people in a list.
Yep.
And it's depending on how you want to do it, but it can be a very straightforward process.
Yeah. When do you do your other one?
So I do it 6 months after.
In October?
Yeah, correct.
After the footy. Yeah, okay. Interesting.
Yep, correct.
The start of spring selling season, I guess.
That's right. So you've got and so then if you look at you go, okay, well, as an example for your core area, and this was something that Luke at Locked On gave me some fantastic feedback about it and probably something that was trying to be smarter within our business was I wasn't doing my CMAs to my core area that way.
Right.
I would meet someone, catch their information. I then had a CMA trail that I'd set up as like a DNA, which would tell me obviously every 6 months, do a CMA, 2 days later, give them a follow-up call or whatever it was.
Yes.
But it was like literally every day there was like two or three people to do that with. And that was on top of everything else. And so I was just not doing it in many respects because the time associated, I'd have to go and print those sales out. That sale list was different than when I did a month ago. It was just getting too bloated and it was just too work intensive. So by changing my mindset around, okay, well, if they're within that area, I'll just do it in bulk to all of them at one hit and then forget about it for 6 months. And then 6 months later, we do it again. It'd take a day and a half maximum.
Right.
And whereas so that's the strategy around those people that are within that physical area.
Yes.
Now, someone that's not within, that's in that out of area BDA or that's not within our physical area of, you know, that might be a suburb that I've only got two potential sellers in.
Yep.
I'm not going to be able to effectively communicate with them in that fashion because I can't remember what suburbs they were if I didn't speak to them for 4 months. So that's where those people would then have that older CMA specific trail set to them, and it would remind me on a day that was appropriate to communicate with them in that way. So so they are, because I have to communicate with them that, like that, they are a little bit more work intensive or time intensive from a prospecting standpoint.
Yep.
But it is also very, you know, reasonably automated. So you can pump them out quickly when that's like you're only getting one or two of those a week, as yeah. opposed to three or four a day. So
your software in this case, Locked On, is telling you what to do on a almost an hour by hour basis.
Yeah, correct. That's okay. Right. Exactly.
Okay, cool. Can you take me through your pre-listing routine? I don't want to give away any special secrets, but can you take me through what happens if you get a call, like next week you're going Thursday to view a home, the sellers are thinking of selling. Can you tell me the process that happens in the lead up to that?
Yeah, absolutely. So, and I don't think there's too many secrets. I just copy what other people have done, to be completely frank.
Right,
so,
because it works.
Yes, right, yeah. Exactly. So, I'm a firm believer of a big portion of someone's decision to sell is made before you get there.
Right.
Not all of it, but a big portion of it. And I think the whole purpose, in my opinion, and I, you know, there's guys out there, and yourself and Aaron might beg to differ, but the whole purpose of a pre-listing kit or pre-listing process is just to be different. Really, it's just to stand out from the other people that they're potentially interviewing, because and whether that's through quality of that content, whether it's through having content or having something that goes to them. So from my side of things, phone call comes in, there's a specific script that we go through with that person, wanting to identify about the property, their situation, pricing, all of those things.
Okay.
Which is very effective. We then, and I'm capturing that data as I'm talking to them. So it's not written down. It's if the phone's transferred through to me before I actually take that call, I'll enter their phone number into Locked On. It will tell me whether or not I already know the person.
Right.
Straight away.
Let you do a quick search. Yep.
Yeah. And it will actually, don't even search, to be honest. I just create a new client and put their mobile number in, and it tells me if they're already on there or not, basically.
Cool. Yep. I love that feature.
Yep, it's fantastic. And if they are, then I'll just quickly look at their notes if they've got any. And so straight away, you've potentially got an area for rapport when you pick the phone up. Oh, yeah, that's right. How are you? I met you. That was about 12 months ago at that open at such and such. People only spun out when you say that type of thing. So now, and if they're not, they're captured on their name and so forth. So it's all entered into Locked On just as I'm talking to them, just our system. But we never book appraisers for the same day. I'll always book them for 24 to 48 hours later. Once the phone's hung up, an SMS just goes straight out to them that just confirms appointment time.
Right.
I also discuss with them on the phone.
There's a point of difference right there. Because chances are your competitors are not sending them an SMS.
Yeah, they're just relying upon the fact that we've booked a time, and you have, and that's fine. And that's all that person expects. But the phone hangs up, and then an SMS goes through to them, which basically just says, you know, cheers for the chat. Everything that we do, that I do, from obviously, as you could probably understand up until now, it's a very system driven approach that we have. But none of that's in the client's face. Everything right. in the client's face is conversational, and my whole aim with sellers and buyers is I want people to be relaxed.
Right.
So I'm not about, how you dress, how you approach it, how you talk is, you know, it's got to be professional, immaculate, all of those things go without saying. But the whole idea is I want people to be relaxed, because if they're relaxed, they're going to tell me more.
Right.
And if they tell me more, I can probably understand their situation better and come up with solutions that fit that situation.
Gotcha.
So, you know, SMS, look, thanks for the chat. Look forward to coming and checking out your property. Just a reminder, it'll be 2 o'clock on Tuesday.
Okay.
Let me know if you need anything. Cheers. You know, not like appointment confirmation, Lands Real Estate, or I don't know, whatever.
It's more like you'd send a typical text message.
That's exactly right.
To a friend.
Because that's what you're doing as well. You know, you think about you are. You're just sending a text.
Yeah.
And so So anyway, so they'll get that. That'll confirm time. Here's my number if you need to contact me beforehand, whatever it is. Then generally within 2 hours, definitely same business day, but within 2 hours, we'll have a hard copy of just a pre-listing document, which has got testimonials, a guide to selling your property with Mark Lands is what it's called, and a letter just confirming everything is delivered to them, whether they're home or not. If they're not home, it's put under the door. If they're not out of area or whatever, it's emailed to them. I much prefer a hard copy going to them where possible.
Yeah,
it's more cost involved, but I believe it has more impact. So basically the rhythm of is they've made a call, it's confirmed. I've spent time talking to them about what they want and their situation on the phone, as opposed to just booking a time. So even through that dialogue, you're trying to make them feel that, hang on a sec, this guy's actually thinking about me and my situation, like where you're looking to move. We might be able to show you appropriate property. So whatever that is, but trying to engage them in on, you know, at that point in time.
Yes, yep.
Yeah, that's SMS. Super then important. Yep, pre-list. And then, so then when you go and sit down with them, you've hopefully kind of tried to distance yourself. And then obviously you go through your actual presentation, however you do that. And also make decisions around, I don't send a pre-list kit to everyone. If there's someone that I've been communicating to for a long time, that pre-list kit might look different. If there's someone that I want to feel that they know us quite well, it'll be a lot less formal. Because you might spend a lot of time nurturing a relationship with a potential seller, and you don't want to go and undo that by sending something too corporate out to them at the wrong point in time.
Okay.
So that's always
a bit of a judgment call on your part, whether they're a client that you know intimately or somebody who's a little more arm's length. Tell me,
that's exactly right.
Do you send an email or a text message, I guess, the day before confirming?
Yeah, I do. Yeah, absolutely. So, and it depends upon how far in advance the appraisal's booked. Right. So, basically what we do is, if it's booked, like if it's booked for the next day, then I won't do that.
Right.
If it's booked for 2 days later, debatable. If it's 3 or 4 days later, they'll actually get a call from me.
Right.
So, they'll get a phone call just to say, look, just confirming that we're catching up this afternoon or whatever the case is.
Right.
The one other step that I didn't bring up previously was there is an SMS that I send from Locked On, which says, g'day, just letting you know I'm 30 minutes from your place. And that goes out half an hour before our appraisal. So basically because you want, you know, sometimes agents don't rock up or whatever, you know, but
you're really building expectation of a good experience, aren't you? I guess with this awesome communication. And the thing is that I love, obviously, and so do you, about an SMS is that, you know, it's going to get read. Who doesn't read an SMS?
That's exactly right. And it just pops up. And I would say those SMSs that I send about, probably the one when I get off the phone and I've just spoke to them, I probably would get a reply to those maybe 70% of the time. Which is, oh, cheers, that's great, thanks, awesome, whatever it is. So you're kind of there then engaging you back.
Yeah.
And then the SMS that I send 30 minutes before I get there, I'd probably get 50-50 would reply to that. The 50% that don't reply to that when I get there would generally say thank you for sending that.
Yes.
So, you know, so yeah, you are, and what you're trying to do is you're trying to demonstrate to them what it's going to be like to work with you.
Yes, you're giving them a living, breathing example of your excellence, I guess.
Yeah, and I listed a property last night where I had been following this particular gentleman, communicating with him for probably 18 months. So I did an appraisal. So I met him at a property I was selling. He didn't purchase it. Identified that he had a place to sell at some point in time. I appraised it. He decided he wanted to buy a block of land. So I just kept in touch with him, and it was about an 18-month process. One of my communications with him was probably about 3 weeks ago, which was just a touch base, get an update. I had an indication that his completion date with the build was not too far away, and I got a reply to that saying, oh, look, I was going to get in touch with you. I'm I'm probably a week or two away now from getting ready to go to market. So can you come out? However, I'm also going to catch up with three other agents.
Right.
And so, and when you've, and when you've communicated with someone for that period of time, generally you're probably not going to get much opposition in when you, when you're appraising or you're trying to win their business. You might get some, but it's, it would be rare to have to go up against three other people.
Yep.
Now, so I was kind of like, okay, fair enough. That's cool. And you know, every person is different. What they need to be comfortable is different. But anyway, we went through that process. I made a decision in that case not to send my normal pre-listing kit to him because he had already got a fair bit of communication from me.
Yep.
So, and I wanted to have an affinity with him as opposed to a corporate relationship. So we anyway went through that process, and that was, I sat down with him and gave him an update on pricing on Tuesday, and he went through his process, was going to give us a decision next week. But, yeah, got in touch yesterday and we signed it up last night.
Right.
Now, we listed that. We had a considerably better fee than the three other people he spoke to.
Yep.
And we listed it. It's going to market at a lower price range than the three other people that right. appraised it as well.
Right.
Now, we will achieve – and it's not a a drastically lower range, but what it's going to do is it's going to drive volume to that open.
Yep.
And – with example upon example upon example of we'll achieve top end of advertised price range or if not above because of the strategy that he was willing to go with based upon the advice that we'd given. So, and don't get me wrong, sometimes I've chased people for that long and you miss their listing.
Yeah.
And it just happens. But it still wasn't a given. But I know it would have been a hell of a lot harder for me to win that business and win it in a way that it's going to transact how it should transact,
yes,
and be marketed how it should be marketed.
Yeah.
If I didn't have that groundwork in place with that person, so and because I genuinely believe it's in his best interest to approach the strategy the way that we recommend he should.
It's interesting because what you're really talking about is the strength of your relationship, and we talk about relationship marketing rules all, which is again, you know, that's what you're doing, it sounds like, all the time. And you're leveraging technology beautifully to make it work for you. Tell me, are you often challenged on your fee, Mark?
Yeah, we are. Yeah, it's a pretty competitive space where we work.
Right. Have you got a favourite script you can share with us, or do you just wing it?
Look, the script that I mainly use with people is, first and foremost, before I will discuss with anyone about a reduction, what we could or couldn't do. The first and foremost, what I'd say to them is, look, so can I please clarify with you that if we can agree upon a fee now, you're happy to go ahead now. So if we can come up with a fee that we're both happy and comfortable with, are you happy to go ahead and go through the paperwork?
I love that. Because in other words, you're not going to bust your butt negotiating for the next 15 minutes to find out they're going to think about it.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
That's exactly right.
So many people fall for that trap.
Yeah. Okay. Oh, look, we'll do it at this. Or, you know, oh, yeah, okay, it's that. It's, you know, and look, we sit around 2.5% as our send fee. And basically, and it depends. I mean, you know, it depends what price bracket we're selling, situation, where it is. Of course, there's factors that come into that. But I'll always clarify with them and get a commitment from them. Okay, if we can agree upon something, are we good to go ahead? Oh, look, we still want to think about it. Okay, well, look, once you make your decision around who it is that you want to go with ideally, and if that is me, let me know, and then we'll make a decision as to the best rate that we can come up with and solution that we can come up with for both of us.
So in other words, you're not giving it away there and then?
That's right. Yeah, yep. Look, I'm willing to,
because they'll just be playing
it.
You off against somebody else.
Correct. Yeah, yep. That's right. So, but if someone says, look, Mark, you know, or even as simply as, look, if we can agree upon a fee, do you feel comfortable with me handling the sale? Like, yep. it's pretty benign. It's not, you know, it's not too hard a close. And they'll either tell you, oh, yeah, we probably do feel comfortable. Okay, cool. Well, look, if you do, can I just ask you what it is that you feel comfortable about? So why is it, let's just forget about fee for a second, but why is it that you would like me to handle the sale? I just want to have an understanding as to your mindset around it, because that's going to dictate to me how I think the process will go. And then I can factor that into any efficiencies that we can come up with to reduce our fee. So what is it that, you know, you would that would make your decision around going with us, assuming, you know, fee's not a consideration. And so, in other words, and this is not dissimilar to our negotiation when we're trying to increase price on, in a contract.
Right.
But I'm really asking them to list off the positive things about using us. So, Mark, you sell more homes in the area than anyone else. Your communication's been great. You've kept in touch with us. You know your product really well. That negotiation script you went through was fantastic. Whatever it is, but I'm basically asking them to give some positives around why they want to use us.
Yeah.
And whatever it is that they list off is what I'll then say to them. Well, look, guys, you know, the person you put in front of a buyer is going to influence what they pay. And it's that skill set and those features and those, I guess, abilities that we have and the track record that you can see is what dictates the results that we get. So, you know, you're not, when you're selecting, you've obviously just identified that these other agents that are offering a lower fee, they're not offering that skill set and those and the ability to extract that result that we do. So, look, we're not going to be able to get to that same level. Like, we just, the amount of time that we invest in each transaction dictates that we can't operate at those levels. We don't compete with our fee to win business. It's our putting you in a net position at settlement.
Yeah.
So, look, we've come in at this fee. You're wanting us to be there. You know, we're at 2.5. You're wanting us to do it for 2%. Look, in this case, we considered around probably 2.4 or 2.35 or whatever that decision that you make is.
Yep.
I'm not going to say that I never move on fees. Of course I do.
Yep.
You know, it just depends. So,
you know, sometimes people have just got to have a win, haven't they? There's nothing you can
you've
do.
You've hit the nail on the head.
Yep.
You've absolutely hit the nail on the head. Is if people feel that they've got something back out of that, it's very important.
Yeah.
And, you know, and as I said, you make a decision on it. You know, we had a situation not long ago where a property was listed and we hadn't done anything on it, but it was listed. I got an email about a week later before we had photos taken that, oh, look, my sisters are going to buy it. And these were genuinely pleasant clients. I'd sold property to them, all of these things, but we've got an email saying, oh, look, our sister's going to buy it. You know, we want to reimburse you for your time. You've been fantastic. And the simple fact is it's in an agency agreement. So even though that we hadn't introduced that buyer, we're entitled to our fee.
Sure.
And, you know, I thought about this and thought about the situation and who they were and a whole lot of things. And part of me said, was like, well, okay, that's fine. We'll process this for you. But, you know, your fee's payable, which is your normal default response. But I kind of looked at it and thought, look, I myself, that wouldn't sit easy with me if I was in his position,
yes,
irrespective of the fact there's a contract in place.
Yes.
And I rightly or wrongly, and I'm not saying this is the right thing to do, I don't know. But for me, I thought, look, I don't want to charge this guy. If his sister buys it, yeah, that's a shame. But look, I'm going to let him do it. And I just called him and said, and I could tell they were worried about it. And I just called him and said, look, you know, it's an unusual set of circumstances. You know, I don't know what the right or wrong thing to do is. I know that there's a contract in place that says, you know, we're entitled to our fee and so forth. But look, if that's the way you want to go, if you've agreed on something with her, I'll release you from your agreement.
Yeah.
Get a contract to draft, get a conveyancer to do your contracts and wish you every success with it.
Yeah. And, that's a class act, I reckon.
Yeah. And look, the dialogue that he came back with was, well, look, Mark, you've demonstrated beyond doubt, you know, the integrity of your work and we still want to pay you a fee.
Wow.
So, you know, and I, he said, even if it's slightly reduced, and I said, look, I'm in your hands. I don't expect anything from it. Talk to your wife. Let me know. You know, if I'm still happy to do contracts, whatever we need to do to help you out, because I've got an agency agreement. But if you want to, you know, whatever, it's up to you. And, you know, that sometimes you've got to make those calls. You know, you got to, at the end of the day, you got to do the right thing by people. And as I said, not saying that's right or wrong, but, you know, I think that has more impact on an ongoing basis. I dare say they'll speak positively about us when they talk to friends and so forth, as opposed to if I said, look, you're going to pay your fee, too bad.
Yeah.
I don't think we probably would have got much.
If you were that desperate that you had to do that, it just sends a really lousy message, don't you think?
It does.
And, I'm sure it happens all the time and people have to suck it up, but
And there's nothing wrong with that. You know, there's nothing wrong with that. And that's what I'm saying is, you know, not to get on your high horse and this and that and the other. But and it would have depended on who they were, on how they approached it with me, on, you know, you make judgment calls. But, yeah, you just sometimes you think, well, look, you know, the end of the day, you've got to, you know, you've got to have everyone, you've got to do to others what you want them to do to you. And I think if you do that consistently, you'll get results out of it.
Yeah, I totally agree. Buddy, our time is up. It was up about 20 minutes ago. So I like to keep these to 30 minutes. And you've been so giving with your time and information. I want to wish you a happy Easter. I know you guys are expecting a baby in, I think you told me, 10 days. I've just shared that with everybody. So congratulations and my best wishes to your family. I hope it goes well. Thanks again for your time, and I look forward to talking to you shortly. In fact, I'm going to look forward to seeing you at Recharge in October. On the Gold
Coast. Looking forward to it.
I can't wait to catch up with you then, and I know everybody's going to be very, very keen to listen to what you have to say, so looking forward to seeing you then.
Awesome, Ray. No, appreciate the opportunity, and you guys do a fantastic job. So, thank you for your time as well.
Thanks so much, Mark. Talk soon.
See you, Ray.
You've been listening to the Top Agents Playbook podcast. For show notes from this episode, recent podcasts, and lots more, go to topagentsplaybook.com.